Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Kevin Boilo here, your host at Epos Radio. And let's see. It looks like we're not on the air. Interesting. Oh, maybe we are on the air. It's December 4th, and we're going to continue our show on creativity and world transformation. Can you hear? I've got Nazarita Goldhammer in the studio. Today, as usual, co-hosting our show, and today we're going to talk about world transformation. We have been trying to define creativity. Lately, I've had the opportunity to watch some really excellent documentaries that focus on environmental change, environmental transformation, and I think they're really good examples for what we're talking about. So maybe we can work our way, Nazarita, through. Are you on the show, Nazarita? We can work our way through the model of an environmentally oriented documentary, and we can discuss it as world transformation. I'm looking for Nazarita Goldhammer to show up in the studio. Still waiting. Okay, so think about a lot of the newer environmental documentaries. They concern water. They concern land. What else do they concern? Pollution. They concern a lot of things that we're doing to our environment that are negative. And here's another one. The rate of extinction of untold species is I guess greater than it's ever been, as far as we know, of the history of this planet. And it's all human caused. So let's just see. It's all human caused, and so these documentaries, I think, give us a good look at what we've done. Most of them are very factually based. But they're also values-based. So in a values-based and factually-based documentary, they try to present information. Information, and then discuss it in a certain ways that open up possibility for transcendence and transformation. That's the important point, is that there's an opportunity for transcendence and transformation in these documentary movies. So if you watch a movie on water, it'll tell you that water resources are drying up, groundwater resources are drying, aquifers are drying up, water is not as clean as it used to be. We have more needs for water all the time because humans can't stop procreating. If you watch a movie about pollution, it'll show you the extent to which we've polluted the oceans, various countries, and give you ideas about how we can overcome that pollution. If you watch a movie about climate change and global warming, that will be very factually based and then give you ideas about, you know, what you can do to change. It's common logic to these environmental movies. One thing I would like to have more information on is, you know, just greater detail, I think. Greater detail, more facts, more super specific ideas. I think a lot of times people who make these movies try to try to keep them general, because people don't seem they don't seem to be able to understand details and more difficult concepts as a whole, right? The attention span of people who watch movies for the most part is not that great. People like to get buzzed. So in a goal of creativity and transformation, how do we stop polluting the ocean with so much plastic? How do we stop killing all large land animals? How does that work? How do we do that? How does that stop? Well, that's the goal of world transformation. So I think at a really basic level, if somebody told that, there's something really, really dangerous afoot and something really negative happening, we all have different responses to it. Some people jump up hysterically and want to do something, but they don't think it through, so what they're doing isn't necessarily good. A lot of activism is like that, street activism, as opposed to well-thought-out reflective activism. We have other types of people who want to do something, and they're very rational, so they want to think it through. And generally, that's what we're aiming for here. There are other personality types, and what they want to do is they sometimes want to deny. They sometimes want to deny that there is a problem. Other people, they're even more clever than the deniers. They're the obfuscators. It's a very clever way of dealing with it. They may have personal financial interests and in the whole situation. So rather than coming right out and saying, well, the problem doesn't exist, or rather than denying it some other way, they'll kind of go along with it. But what they'll do is they'll bury it in details. And you can see how that could happen, right? Burying a problem in details. And you might actually get people who work for the government who bury the problem in details. So they look like they're helping, but they're not. Is Nazarita Goldhammer in the studio? I know she was joining us remotely. Is she in the studio? Nope. Nazarita Goldhammer is still trying to join us. If she's able to, then we'll bring her out as soon as possible. What am I trying to do here? I'm trying to taxonomically identify different sorts of responses to obvious problems. Right? So that's a problem of subjectivity. That's a people problem. Right? That's a people problem. So we're really talking about human subjectivity and how we see various problems. And I'll tell you something else that will actually, if you really listen to it, it's kind of astonishing. When you sit people down in a circle and you talk about problems, flat-footed brainstorming is not often enough. You have to really examine the people in the room. Right, because they're going to give you an answer that's based upon the way they see the world. So here we are talking about creativity and world transformation. The way that you're creative depends upon who you are. The way that you see world transformation depends upon who you are. It's not just an objective thing. It's just not. It is not objective. So it seems to me that if we're going to define creativity, if we're going to define world transformation, if we're going to build some kind of a vision about a plan, then it seems to me that what we have to also take into account of is who is making the decisions, like who's in the room. So I'm going to have Nazarita weigh in and on these matters. Again, we're still trying to get her into the studio. You see, this is always a problem with modern technology. So I'm going to have Nazarita go ahead and respond right now. What do you think about this notion, Nazarita, that we have different personality types and different subjectivities who approach the notion of creativity differently? And the notion of world transformation differently. What do you think about that?
So it depends on obviously we all have different views about what world transformation is. Some people think world transformation has to do with their own race. And some people think that are in alignment to the earth, and they think, what does transformation mean? So I think that's part of where we start. What is a transformation process? And we've talked about this, and about transformation isn't about an easy process. And I read this quote the other day, and it was about a writer and how they related to their creative process, and they said, my creativity doesn't come from a void, it comes from chaos. And transformation comes from that chaos of trying to see what is ahead, how to make the right choices, how to go forward in a way that is going to change what happened in the past, and maybe even what we're experiencing in the present, which has to do with, we're talking about climate change, and we're talking about how that affects us, water, air, food, earth, community, home. How does this all apply? I'll give you a really good example. Our food, there's so many connections to our food. One is GMOs, how food is being changed by the people that are engineering crops that are bound in the future to fail, or they're to limit the creativity of the seed to produce something different in the name of science, or in the name of feeding more people, or in the name of yielding more yield. But that's not necessarily true. And so we have to look at pesticides. Water is now getting into our food through the water that they use to water organic plants. Well, that seems to defeat the purpose. Also, I saw a really good program, and they kept saying there is no away. And it took me a minute to realize what they meant when they said there is no away. They were talking about garbage and plastic, and I thought how easy it is in our language to say throw it away. Let's throw it away, and how often I say those words. Just throw that away. Put that away. And where is away? Like if we follow the chain of our garbage, where is away? Like it's easy to throw it in a bag and throw it in our big trash container and not know where that goes. It just goes away in some magical place where it all gets digested and broken down and we never see it again and the earth is plentiful. But that isn't true. That's a fairy tale. And we live in in these countries that are heads of the world, we live in these countries that have us buy into the Kool-Aid of the fairy tale. It doesn't matter what you choose, buy more clothes. Doesn't matter where they come from. It doesn't matter that the fibers break down at every washing and influence the water that is in the ocean, that influences the creatures that live there, that influences the food that we eat. Don't worry about the garbage that ends up in a landfill, that as soon as there's any shaking of the earth or an earthquake, it becomes liquefied, liquefaction. And so we are taught that things should go away. Everything can go away in a fairy tale world, and our world will be okay and untouched. But the more you look into climate, the more you look into water and air and food, the more you see where we are all so connected. So instead of saying, I live in the United States, I live in one earth. It's one earth. We may put boundaries on everything, and we may say, this is the line. But truly, what affects the other side of the world is going to affect you. If there's radiation leak on the opposite end of the world, it will eventually get to you. It is our concern. We should feel that kinship with the earth to know that we're not dealing with just this little space that we call home or earth or United States or Berlin or England or Scotland. Yugoslavia, it doesn't matter. We are all one, and the more that we begin to see that, the more we'll become global citizens. We'll become citizens that have a large empathy, have a deep well of empathy for other people, other animals, other species, the earth, what we're doing to the air, what we're doing to the water. We have to think like global citizens. That's part of transformation. It's to get out of our little group that is segregated into the larger mindset of who are we? We're the human race, and we have to get into that.
Great. Thank you, Nazarita. Wonderful comments. I know our listeners always listen to you. And the reason I know that is because they write in and they talk about your very informative comments. Very valuable. Thank you very much. I want to continue with the line I'm pushing, and that is a lot of times people will discuss only the problem, the objective problem. The government does that a lot. But it's not so much discussed who the people are who are going to try to solve the problem. And I keep getting reminded of this over and over and over. And again, that we really need to be focused on who is solving the problem, who is addressing it, who are the people who are addressing it. Just a moment. You need to listen. So we need to actually to think about who it is who is solving the problem. So if we have somebody who has 100 lumber companies and they only care about chopping down forests to make money, then that person might not be able to see beyond that interest. Very important. If we have somebody who cares about ecosystem science, and they like to listen to all perspectives, try to create a balanced plan that's healthy and sustainable, that would be a very different kind of subjectivity who's actually trying to address that problem. And this reminds me of the great work called The Republic by Plato, one of the greatest works of all time. And he makes a really convincing argument that you have to train for decades in order to be able to have the mindset to be a leader. You have to go through a special training. And in fact, a philosopher king, which is what they're called, they don't have property. This is really important. They don't have those sorts of interests. The way that they have sex is also according to rules. They usually don't marry. And they have times when they will be sexual, and it'll be ritualized and be very beautiful, but it's nothing like what we do now. It's a non-addictive, non-compulsive, non-narcissistic training that you go through many years for, and that includes being in the gymnasium, as it's called. The gymnasium is where we learn to regulate our bodies so that we have strong bodies and we can regulate our impulses. We learn to read countless important books. We learn to reason mathematically and logically. We develop character that's full of virtue. We actually build a life that's philosophically astute, so that we understand the issues at hand. Now, the way it works in the United States, any hack who happens to have money because he's broken the law and he's stolen from a lot of people, he's hurt a lot of people, and has made a lot of money, that person can actually run the country. So then we have a country that's being run by somebody who's so saturated with personal and self-interest, how could they possibly make wise decisions? How could that possibly happen? So in a program of world transformation, then we can talk about it at the individual level. We can talk about it at the social and cultural level, the political aspects of the social level. So they're two different conversations. So one conversation is about what you can do, what each person can do. What can I do to transform myself? How can I grow in my being so that I can actually participate in positive change, so that I can participate in world transformation? How can I do that? What do I need to do? That's a great set of questions. And then the second set of questions are, how do we coordinate everybody together to operate with some kind of unity? So let's go back, though, to let's actually tie them both together. Think about what that looks like. If I'm a random, average, afraid, anxious member of the bourgeoisie, got myself a college degree, got myself an office, wear my white shirt and my tie, my kid or two, and I make a good salary, I can buy myself a new car, I can buy a house with a little green lawn. I get all sorts of adulation at work because I'm a good hard worker, and I'm kind of, they think I'm smart. Got myself a health care plan. Got myself a 401k. So they've got me. See, I've been ensnared. I've been completely ensnared by the corporation and the government. So I've become what we call an organization man. If you happen to be female, then you are, by definition, an organization woman. That's what you are. That is your identity, because everything in your life is structured by your company, or in the case that you have a governmental job, your life is structured by your job. People who work for state and federal governments know that unless they really screw up, they'll have a job for life. You have a great pension at the end that you probably don't deserve. You got your health care plan until you die. And you just kind of motor along in your intoxication, your inebriation. And what is it exactly that you do for the world? Well, you definitely make the fat cats a lot more money because you're just a, what you are is a little cog, you're a peon, and you mean nothing to the owners of the company. You are replaceable. There are 1,000 people standing in line for your job who can do your job better than you and charge less money. And that's always the case. So you actually mean nothing. You are just an instrumental. You don't have any intrinsic value at all. You're an instrument. So if you take a person like that, works for the government, works for a corporation, or take another kind of a person who's part of the labor force. You work for a plant. You work for a factory. You work hard. Sometimes you work swing shifts. Sometimes you work graveyard. Maybe you work day shift. You wear your work boots. You have your little lunchbox, your thermos that's dirty because you've had it for like 23 years. And you drive your little truck or your car to the plant. And you work your job. You got your health care so that they can get you back to work. Maybe you have a little bit of retirement at the end. They'll give you a little bit of money every month, you know, after you retire. It's not much, but they'll give you a little bit. And so you're also structured. And the deeper that you go, the longer you're in, the longer you're an organization man, the harder it is to get out. And the harder it is to think your way out. Here's a fourth example. We've talked about corporation, government, working class labor. Let's talk about academia. So here you are, you busted your butt, you became a professor. You got yourself a nice shiny PhD. Okay, well, you finally get a job and you think that you're all that. You're one of the chosen. And you get to teach class, and they pay you money. And then you realize that it's publish or perish. You have to publish in various areas that you're encouraged to publish in, these stupid little papers, and go to stupid little conferences so that you can keep your job. And eventually you write a book. You know, you write your first book, and boy, you think you're all that. Got your 401k. Called something different if you're a professor. It's a retirement plan. Got your health care. And you keep getting raises. They're small, but every time you get one, you feel good. What you can say is completely circumscribed by the politics of that academic department inside your institution in your geographic area in your country. And if you believe otherwise, then you're completely ignorant. So how are those people supposed to think their way out to world transformation? They're already being given the handouts, constant. These little positive reinforcements that you get that make you think that you're special. They tap into your narcissism. Oh, wow, you published another book. Oh, wow, you wrote another poem. Oh, wow, you gave a lecture. Whoa. Here's another one. Here's a fifth. Is there a fifth? Yep, healthcare. Here we go. So you go out and you get yourself a nice little shiny RN degree and you can get yourself a job anywhere in this country because we all always need RNs to take care of the sick people who are sick because of the environmental disaster we're waging on them. So you go out and get your little shiny RN degree or believe you me, RNs are duped every day. They think they're all that. They're completely immersed in the system. Oh, here's what's worse. You get yourself an MD. You are an MD. It's a very short degree program. It's only 4 years. Medical doctor. And then you get your residency, and then you become all that. You're the doc. They call them docs. Doc. Hey, doc this and doc that. And you get to say what the truth is. So you're given all the psychological adulation. You're sort of at the head of the food chain. The doctors who've been there longer are ahead of you, et cetera. There's definitely a really rigidified hierarchy. Well, so you have status. Maybe you do a little bit of good. You help a few people. you got a great retirement plan, you got a decent salary that keeps increasing. It's probably bigger than what you're actually worth. So the picture I'm trying to paint is this. All these major institutions, politics and science, the university, culture, professionals, they go through their own. Professionals who don't work in a hospital, professionals of various kinds, you know, accountants and lawyers and psychologists. That's the sixth area. And they're given all of these positive reinforcements. And you kind of build up a bank account, so to speak. And you play a role. And there's a circumscription to what you cannot and cannot say. In psychology, most psychologists won't go to bars because it looks bad. Or something might happen in a bar you would be ashamed of. And you can put that example anywhere in my system here. So now we have 90% of the population whose lives and their minds are being circumscribed by relations of power, ethics, social expectations, the promise of a nice, easy retirement. Why would I want to ruin my 401k? Why would I want to ruin my big house that I can't afford with a big mortgage? Everybody thinks I'm something because I got a big house. So why would I want to ruin any of this? Why would I want to give up my health care? Oh, my God, if I didn't have health care, then I wouldn't have a doctor to go treat all my medical infirmities that are being caused by my very job. So what's happened is that we have a highly inebriated, structuralized culture full of people who are not pulling their own chain anymore. They're living in a super structuralized country, super structuralized Western world, as it were. Highly structuralized. The problem is, because let's go back to the problem that Nazarita Goldhammer and I are trying to solve. If you have 90% of the population, or a high amount, it doesn't have to be exactly 90, but if you have most of the population whose life is structured by these carrots and these future promises and this comfortable life, there's so much inertia that's built up, social and political inertia, that most people won't change. And so now, let's go back to the basics. Let's take this combination discussion about the individual and the society, and let's just go back and talk about the individual. Just you. There are many people who are unhappy. They suffer. They have all kinds of mental illnesses. They go into the therapist. They're like, I don't feel good. I'm anxious all the time. I feel overwhelmed. I think my husband's cheating on me. They're confused. They're depressed. Or worse, they're bipolar. They have schizoaffective disorder. They have schizophrenia. All kinds of ailments. And a really good therapist might ask, well, why are you here? What can I do for you? What do you think I can do to help you? Well, I want you to fix me. I want to change my life. You see, this is the thing. Most people get themselves into these comfortable little ruts. They've got stuff. They've got their furniture. People will fight over a sofa, an inanimate object. They'll fight over a wine cooler. They'll fight over an old car. They'll fight over a wine collection. because they don't want to give up external attachments that provide them with an identity. But guess what? It's an identity of inebriation. It destroys freedom, destroys that transcendental aperture. If you are super, super attached to something, if you really think it through, you're going to see some of the suffering that you will have because of that attachment. It will prevent you from pursuing the good. So let's go to our example. So this person is seeking out psychotherapy. They're unhappy. They're suffering. They're married. They have a couple kids. They work 50 hours a week. They've got a house. They've got a bank account, a 401k, two new cars, 2 weeks of vacation coming up, and they're suffering. They're not happy. They're trying to figure out why. And they figure out in therapy that they have to make changes in their life in order to have any chance of overcoming their suffering. They have to make life changes. I mean, you can't expect to do the same thing and get a different result. We all need to apply that. You can't do the same thing and expect to get a different result. You got to try something a little bit different. That's the problem. People become so attached to the way of doing things that they don't want to try a new way. So this is the problem of creativity and world transformation. It's a piece of it. I'm not saying it's the whole. There are people who are afraid of being creative. I know it for a fact. I've taught them. I've worked with them. They're actually afraid of letting go of these attachments they have. Who would I be without my 401k? Who would I be without this job? Who would I be without my house and the swimming pool? What would people think of me if I couldn't go on a vacation anymore? Or if my lawn was not watered? These are really superficial, idiotic, infantile questions. These questions are stupid questions that stupid people ask themselves. They're meaningless. They don't matter, but they think they matter. It's perception. Okay, let's come at it from a different angle. People will say, well, I do agree that this problem, X, Y, and Z, is getting worse, and I'm very concerned about it, and I'd like to see some change. You know, the second a person says, I'd like to see some change, they're speaking in the subjunctive, I would like to see some change. They just opted out of personal responsibility. Here's another person. I'm going to contribute my life energy to making a change. You see how that's different? That's a person who assumes responsibility in an authentic way. Authentic. But the first person says, I'd like to see some changes with immigration or pollution or water scarcity. They're hoping that somebody else is going to fix it. These are the same people that say, oh, just throw it away or push it away. And when Nazarita brought this up earlier, there's no way. But if you, there's no way, there's nowhere for the pollution to go. There's no way part. There's no way part. To put all the bad people and the criminals. You know, there's nowhere to put them. There's no Botany Bay. And similarly, there's no exit. There's no way out of the situation we have in the world right now. And there's no way out of who you are unless you take personal responsibility today and make those changes. That's the problem. So here's a slightly different way of saying it. A lot of folks will say, well, absolutely, you know, I tithe at my church and I give money and, you know, the church does good things. They help poor people and they help women and you know, they're fighting poverty, and so I'm going to give my money, or I'll donate an hour of my time, you know, every month to shelters for animals, and that'll be good. See, I know I'm doing a good thing for that. Those things are fictions. Just like Proposition 12 passed in California recently, that now mandates cage-free raising of farm animals. And so everybody thinks, oh, well, I can buy these eggs now because they're cage-free, and that means the chickens who are laying them are really happy and they're living these wonderful lives. It's a fiction. World transformation, it goes back to our book on Deventonomy. It means figuring out what the damn truth is. Really digging until you know the truth. Not being satisfied with what people say. Seriously. If you want a good example of that, go research Dr. Friedman, the ice pick doctor, who perfected the transorbital frontal lobotomy. He was a shyster, a stupid, witless, mean, narcissistic MD. He was going to go get famous. And he hurt a lot of people. All the people who prescribed these outrageous psychotropic drugs to human beings should be ashamed of themselves. It is a scam. You don't heal people with psychotropic drugs. You manage them. No question about it, you manage them. You keep them out of trouble. But if you're a psychiatrist or a psychiatric nurse, you swallow that shit, hook, line, and sinker, that's somehow doing good. So transformation takes personal responsibility. And it means that you have to, it actually means that you have to give up some of your comfortable life. That's what I want to say. You have to be willing to put your life at risk. You have to be willing to be courageous. If I can guarantee you this, I'm hopefully I will become wiser, but one piece of wisdom I have is this: if you're not risking anything, you will get nothing. And I know that for 100% certainty. It is a truth of the world. So if you say, well, I'm going to work my job and work my little inebriated life, and at the end of the year, if I have $5, I'll give that $5 to the poor. That's not putting yourself at risk. That's not even a gift. A gift, a real true gift, is when you risk yourself for a higher purpose or the good. So we're talking about morality, personal responsibility, courage. All these things are important to be creative and to engage in world transformation. If you can't do those things, nothing will ever change. We're going to come right back to this next week. We will address any of the technical issues in our studio by then. We will be back at you. Same bandwidth. We're talking about creativity and world transformation. So I want to thank everybody who regularly shows up to listen to our show. We actually transcribe all shows and edit them very carefully, and we publish them as books. So if you want to get our shows, you can buy our book. I want to wish you all a nice week, and we'll see you next week. Same day, same time. Epis Radio, signing out.
I just logged out because it wouldn't sign out.